Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency. I am your host, Rainmaker. Today's guest is Kayla Young with Safe Place.
I am here at Safe Place in downtown Olympia with Kayla Young. How are you doing, Kayla?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, so can you introduce yourself and in your position and share with me how you came to be here?
Yeah, so I'm Kayla. My title is the Youth Prevention and Sexual Assault Manager, which is shifting as we're reorganizing. So I'll be doing outreach and some direct services and then working in prevention still. I've been here about a year and a half, and my undergraduate work is all infant and family mental health. And I found that a lot of the work I was doing there was kind of like putting out these fires after trauma and working with kids and families that have struggled through domestic violence and sexual assault. And I really wanted to try to get ahead of it a bit more. And so coming to Safe Place and being able to work in prevention and doing like parent education and youth education while still helping those that have been harmed already has been really fulfilling. So that's how I ended up here. It's been a really great year and a half.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you give me a brief history of Safe Place, what Safe Place is?
Yeah, Safe Place has been around for a really long time. It's been about 50 years. It's been in the heart of Olympia the whole time, although office building has been elsewhere. We've always served Thurston County. And it started as a DV, domestic violence and sexual assault nonprofit organization. That's what we are today. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. So on your website, there are a lot of different just resources.
Yeah.
So some of those are just general information resources, and some of those are actually services that y'all could provide. Yep. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So our services that we actually provide. So I always start off with talking about our sexual assault services and DV services inside hospitals. So our advocates are dispatched 24/7 to support someone who is on their way to the hospital who's experienced severe domestic violence or sexual assault. And we are there in the hospitals offering emotional support, offering more resources, making sure that they know their rights as a survivor as well, and just supporting them through for as long as they need us to be there. We provide follow-up to that as well. We have our legal services, which helps people with intimate partner violence, restraining orders, protection orders, going to court and supporting them in court. We've had advocates sit up on the stand with survivors for emotional support. Moving into, we do community outreach, helping populations in the community with food, supplies like household supplies, shampoo, conditioner, things like that, clothing. We have our housing program that houses individuals who have experienced domestic violence or sexual assault, and they're really just trying to get back on their feet from that. People can lose a lot when they flee. Everything from furniture to identification, income. So we do our best to get them back on their feet and housed. We have our shelter too, which is a level 4 high lethality shelter. So it's, we are sheltering people who are at the greatest risk for homicide, or severe like stalking and things like that. So we have, I think, 11 or 12 rooms now. We screen people in, any identity, any gender, everyone is welcome. They screen in, and we just work to get them to safety. We keep them safe while they're here and then help moving forward, even if that's into our housing program. we can help them into there as well. And we also did just start our contracts. It's a domestic violence high-risk team. So we have officers that will call us directly on scenes of survivors who have experienced high levels of domestic violence that score high on that danger assessment. They call us directly and we speak to that survivor right then and there. And that night, do we need shelter? Do we need hotel? Do we need a safety plan? And then we follow them through the court system as they go to provide support and make sure that we're trying to reduce the rates of recidivism and like going back and having to do all this over again when it gets even more dangerous. And so that's a program that we now have too.
Yeah. Awesome. So I want to go in a little bit on some of those programs. The one that you just mentioned, that's new, working with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about a little bit more like details around that?
Yeah. Yeah. So this started a couple years ago, but it's new to us at Safe Place. And it had been designed as a scale to assess risk and danger. And they started applying it in law enforcement and other areas. And now they're trying to roll it out as a standard. And so what happens is police officers are dispatched. Right now we work with Lacey Police Department. I think we work with the Sheriff's Department and we're kind of figuring things out with OPD. They will do the danger assessment on site. They will call us and say, hey, this is a really high danger assessment score. And so then we talk to that survival right then and there, usually over the phone. And if they want to receive services, then we say, hey, this is what we do tonight. Get you safe tonight. Do you have family that can come be with you? Most of the time in those calls, the perpetrator will be arrested. So they'll have a safe night, but from there, we don't know, like, are they released? Did they make bail? Are they going to be back? Are they released that night? So safety and planning with them in that moment. And then from there, if they pursue charges or want support in that, we help them through all of that. Restraining orders, protection orders, going to court. And the wonderful thing with this is that we also work directly with the prosecuting attorney's office and the police department so that we all know what this incident was, what happened, so we can work together to make sure that no details are lost as it travels through the court system so that there's fair punishment and things will remain safe for that survivor. Because it was so dangerous, nothing's getting lost and we're all on the same page when it comes to sentencing and things like that.
So I have a question about that.
Yeah.
You know, working with law enforcement mm-hmm. can be very triggery for some individuals.
Yeah.
And there's fear oftentimes around involvement. So how would you navigate that?
Yeah, that is a big thing that we see at Safe Place, because oftentimes if we're responding to domestic violence or sexual assault, even human trafficking, there's police involved and there's that fear, right? Whether it's possible warrants that somebody has, there's an implicit fear of law enforcement because of the history of law enforcement with racial profiling, and there's a lot of perceived and some of it realized aggression on behalf of the police department and not being so trauma-informed. And so the first thing that we do when we meet somebody, we go into the hospital or we talk to them, the first thing that we say is we are not affiliated in any way with law enforcement. We are separate from them. We do not work for them. We will advocate for you, whether it's with them or with whoever else you need support with. And we also let them know, too, in the hospitals that we are not affiliated with the hospital. We are just Safe Place and we're here just to help you. Nobody else is partnered with us to the point where we would give them information unless you tell us it's okay. We are here to just protect you. And that tends to make things easier, but not always. Some people still don't trust, and that's okay, and it's warranted, and we just do the best that we can to try to let them know that we're there and that we're there just for them. So it's a toss-up, but a lot of times once they hear that, they know, okay, these people are safe from Safe Place, and they can support me.
Yeah, there's another concern that kind of goes in along with this sort of thing, which is the role of the mandated reporter.
Yes.
Yeah, and so all of the legal advocates, is it only your legal advocates or anyone here at Safe Place
anyone
considered a mandated reporter?
Anyone here, including our front desk. And we are big on, especially with CPS, we know there's a history of CPS being discriminatory or, they just, no program is perfect, but that program has a history. And so we let people know right up front, even when we're getting consent for services, we are mandated reporters. If we suspect or you disclose that there's child abuse happening, we have to report.
Yeah.
We also let them know that we aren't pushing for that. That's not our goal. We want your family to stay safe and stay united, and CPS can be a barrier there. And so, we let them know if you need to ask a question about CPS or about something that happened with your child and you're unsure and you're scared, say, what if?
24th is a hypothetical situation.
Yep. Because the last thing we want to do is make things more stressful. And by someone coming here and saying, we are fleeing domestic violence, is already brave and showing us that you're putting your child first. You're here with your child trying to leave that situation. Mm-hmm. We don't want anyone to come in and then take your child. Mm-hmm. So just letting them know up front. And if there is ever a time that we do have to call CPS, for me, my best practice is letting that family know. And sometimes I'll say, we can make the call together. Because if you're there in that call too, and they can hear you, and you can speak with them, and they can see that you're working with us, that's a huge leap forward, and it makes a big difference a lot of the time.
Good to know. Yeah. So an important message to take away from this is wording matters.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
It does.
Moving on from that, your domestic violence program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you explain a little bit more about that? Is that a support group or other? How do you handle that?
Yeah, we do actually have a support group. I forgot to mention earlier, it's for sexual assault and domestic violence. We've put it together because what we're really talking about is trauma. And so we don't go into details of an event, but we just help people process and learn about trauma and how it affects our body and our lives. And so that's really impactful. Our support group went from 1 to 2 people a week with some tweaking and a new advocate who runs support group. We're getting upwards of 20 people a week, and it's phenomenal. That sense of community itself is huge. And so the one thing that does get really tricky with domestic violence in general for Safe Place is that we are intimate partner violence. So domestic violence can be somebody that you live with. It could be between family. But for us, our dollars are designated for intimate partner violence. And so sometimes someone walking in saying, you know, my dad is doing this to me or my brother is doing this to me, it's hard. We want to help everyone. But federally speaking and financially speaking, we don't have the funds for that. But we're going to do everything we can to get you to the right place to support you in that. So that's where Safe Place is a little different, is that it's just intimate partner.
Okay.
With sexual assault, it is different. It could be stranger. It could be anybody who's experienced sexual assault. We will help you.
That's an important clarification.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely good for people to know. And so that also explains why you have such an extensive list of resources on your website. You have a domestic violence shelters listed. There's Hope Alliance, Turning Point, Dove House, through YWCA in Kitsap and Pierce. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are other places that you can, and you talk with them and connect them, and you might call out to one of those places and say, here, I have this person here that I want to send you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We do have someone right at the street, an organization called Innovations, and we've had them call us and say, hey, we have someone here right now that could really use your services. We don't offer those services. I'm going to walk them up the block to you. And I love that. I love that. That's just how we work with one another. And it's so important. And it's personal and comforting and trauma informed. And so that's what we shoot for. We're always able to call and say, hey, you know, we're from Safe Place. Do you have space for this person? And things like that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You are listening to Resource Report on Chaos and my interview with Kayla Young with Safe Place. We'll be right back after a brief message.
Safe Place would like to talk with survivors of sexual abuse, assault, and rape about how they have found healing and how Safe Place can better support survivors. All adults who want to talk about their experiences and insights are welcome to share their stories in confidential interviews done by phone or in person. To schedule an interview, call Safe Place at 360-786-8754 or visit safeplaceolympia.org.
Welcome back to Resource Report on Chaos. Let's return to the conversation with Kayla Young at Safe Place.
And then also working with you work with different legal aid services. You have a legal clinic here.
Yep. That's with South Sound Legal. I always forget because it's after hours for Safe Place, but it is so incredibly important and wonderful to have these officials or attorneys come and volunteer their time to help these individuals. Is huge. It's a game changer. And then our advocates are trained to help with that paperwork outside of clinic too. But just what a wonderful resource. I think anyone on the street, if something were to happen and they needed an attorney, holy smokes, it's a lot of money just thinking about it, you know? And so to have that support there and get guidance is incredible. That's just a great resource.
I can personally attest how amazing it is. Yeah. Going through my own divorce, this was how I did it, coming to your legal clinic for over a year.
Yep.
Yes. And we got through it, and it was helpful and supportive. One thing that I want to ask about is the whole situation with just getting into the legal clinic, okay? You've got to get here 45 minutes early and stand in line and hope to be one of the first maybe 5 or 6 people in line, you know? And y'all are always telling us, don't be in the parking lot.
Yeah.
But then how else are we supposed to do that? And so people will be sitting in their car. 100%. What is the issue? Why?
So we have been looking at things. We used to have more staff, so it wasn't that we'd get through people, but not enough. And so what we've come up with is, in acknowledging that there are barriers, I have to take the bus. Like, I can't get there until this time because I have my child, or I have to get off of work. That's not fair. Those are barriers, and they're inevitable barriers. And so what we're doing now is having people register online, which is also can be a barrier, but if you're going to you need to register, call us and I will help you do it on the phone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That way you have a spot because you still need to talk to someone regardless of the hours that you work. You know, the situation with child, bring your child, you know? So we're trying to make it more accessible and also not wasting people's time who take their time to get here and they're just not able to be seen. And so that's what we're doing moving forward. And that's on behalf of Sound Legal Aid as well. They're wanting to do it that way. And I think it makes better sense for everyone. That way it's evenly distributed.
When did that online sign up begin?
4 weeks ago.
Brand
new. It's very new. Okay. It's very new. And we're still working out the kinks of it. But so far it's been good. And we're telling people that do come by. You know, this is how we're doing it now. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, if there's kinks that happen or it's not working out for one, we're going to get you services. We're going to find a way. We have to work some things out and it comes up, but we're getting there and this is going to help.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a process.
It is. It is.
Hang in there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in this transition of setting that up better, is it the sort of thing where people maybe don't know about that, or, you know, they're not able to somehow do it online or call or whatever. So they're showing up 45 minutes early.
Yeah.
They're the second person in line.
Yeah.
And then all those people get told none of you have gotten in because we've already got a list online.
Right.
Is that what's happening?
So we've done a lot of advertising, a lot of speaking with people. We'll speak to people who are at the court when we go to court. We're just trying to spread the word, and so does Sound Legal Aid. But if someone does show up, I would assume if there's time, they're going to do it for sure. And with that, those appointments being set, it's saving time. And if there is that barrier and they just show up and say, this is all I could do, we're going to help. Like, let's hop on the computer. Do you need a phone? We might have a phone. Things like that. Mm-hmm. To just make sure that we're helping them get to where they need to be, because in a lot of agencies it's easy to say all you need to do is this. I don't know why you're not doing this. Well, think about the 10 other hurdles that are in the way, and also emotionally just
task initiation.
Exactly. It's you
executive dysfunction issues
100%, especially in trauma.
Like, yeah,
you cannot bring your brain down. You can't connect to those cognitive processes when you're experiencing trauma. It's just that's not how your brain works. And that's what we want to help with. It's not just getting you the resources, but getting you there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And remind us again, when are the legal clinics?
Yes, they are the first and third Thursday evenings, but can be changed because of holidays. So just letting people know, keeping people updated. Especially people who come in are like, hey, I have a question about this. I've been working, doing with Sound Legal Aid. Oh my goodness. Let me let you know too, that we've changed it to this day next week. Mm-hmm. So just trying to let everybody know.
And what times are they at?
So we close our doors at 5, for just walk-ins in general public. So getting here around 5, your appointment time will be, the first one I think will be around 5. And then just going, I think they have an end time, but depending on appointments too, they can go longer. Things can happen. We're going to keep an appointment. We're going to work with you.
I've been here tonight till 9:30
before. Yep. And we have wonderful advocates that stay from Safe Place and those attorneys that will stay and just make sure you get what you need.
The drop-ins. Mm-hmm. Drop-ins.
Yep. Mondays, you can drop in business hours. And we have whoever's here on Monday who's an advocate, we're going to help you. There's a misconception that it's just legal drop-ins.
Okay.
It's for anybody. Come drop. You have a question. You need to talk to somebody. A lot of our legal advocates do come and work with drop-ins. You can request a legal advocate for drop-ins if we have one. But I'll also go down and do drop-ins too. And, you know, how can I help you? If it's a protection order, well, I actually can't help you with that. I'm going to go grab a legal advocate. So we're here. Whoever's in the building is really just trying to help out.
Talk about your shelter residential services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shelter is, because it's so high needs, high danger levels, we don't disclose the address to anybody. It's off-site.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
not this.
Nope.
Okay.
Off-site, and it's also even the people that are coming to shelter, they are picked up from somewhere else and brought to shelter because we try to keep it that tight under locks, because people are dangerous and people will do whatever they need to do sometimes to get to somebody.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's off-site. we lock and key and codes and cameras and everything that we can. And then residential services is a lot of that work is done either in shelter with survivors that are trying to get housed from shelter. And then others that...
So when you say in shelter,
yeah,
you're talking about like if they're at the Union Gospel Mission or other kind of urine shelters that they have around town.
And so right now our capacity has, we've been really bogged down. So we're working directly with our shelter right now only. But there are cases that if we have the capacity, we'll take it on and say, okay, like we will meet you where you're at if that's what you need us to do. And get going, do an intake, do what we need to do. And a lot of times those housing intakes can immediately turn into a legal referral too, right? You know, I need to get an apartment. I need to get away from it. I have a prior eviction. They're not going to let me. Let's pop you over to legal and see what we can do about it.
Sure.
And get them in that way too.
Right on. Yeah. And to that end with housing, do you work with coordinated entry?
Yes. So we have specific funds for coordinated entry and a contract for them. And we also have HUD and just generalized funding as well.
Now, in a previous interview I did with the Family Support Center, we discussed coordinated entry. Can you just give us a little understanding of what that is again?
Yeah, I will do my best. Yeah. Housing is one that they do so much. I'm like, how do you handle it all? But it is a separate source of funding, and you're still working with us as Safe Place. We're still going to get you housed as best we can, but we're using coordinated entry funds and then coordinated entry processes. So you have to do an intake with Safe Place, but also with coordinated entry. And we work closely with Family Support Center, actually, to get them housed that route, too. We'll even have... FSC come into our shelter and work with those that are using coordinated entry. So it's just a matter of who you're working with. And if it's coordinated entry specifically, we have FSC, and we have a separate intake, but we're still walking you through it, essentially.
And you, there are other organizations in Thurston County that work with coordinated entry as well,
yep,
besides even just Family Support Center,
yep,
guys. So you're going to be working with those as well.
Yep. We work closest with Family Support Center because we have a working relationship and we have ROIs, release of information, signed, so we can work together. But you can work with coordinated entry in other places as well, including DSHS, which is notoriously busy, but they have that option too.
Right on. That's good to know.
Yeah.
And you have a 24-hour helpline.
Yes. So 24-hour, we mean it. We have someone on that helpline all night, 7 days a week, holidays, someone's covering. So if you need to talk to somebody, we're there to talk. As things are being switched around, it might end up being that at night, that helpline is, you're calling our helpline number, it might route to a different helpline that has someone manning it. We can only do so much sometimes, and if we don't have staff, we want to make sure that we're covered. And so at night, it might go to this person over here, and they'll say, okay, great, we have your information, or we can help you right now. Anything else, like, we'll tell a Safe Place in the morning, and they'll get back to you. And so that helpline is resources, screenings, legal screenings. Hey, I'm interested in the DVSA group. Great, we'll get your information for that. Housing referrals. We have right now, I'm not sure moving forward, funds for relocation. So if you're fleeing and you have a safe place to go that's across the country, we'll get you there. Like, we will pay for it and we'll get you there.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah, and we do it quickly, very quickly if we have the capacity. We've had someone leave the night of. You know, we've gotten a call that said, I'm really trying to leave. My partner's being released tonight, and he's the one who victimized me. I've met someone in the Target parking lot with gift cards and saying, here's gift cards for food, here's gas, I will book you hotel each night that you go, and we'll get you there. And we've gotten them there in 3 days or 4 days or however long it takes. We do it. And that's funding dependent. So always just calling the helpline too and saying, hey, can you guys do relocations right now? We'll let you know. We can or we can't. But if we can, we will do it fast.
Yeah. And your 24-hour helpline. So you said that it could route different people. Mm-hmm. So I know that there are other organizations that also offer a crisis site, a helpline.
Yep.
And there is the crisis clinic, actually, as yep. well. Are though is the NBHR has yes. a crisis line?
Yep.
Are they all connected?
Not quite. And so this is a new thing we're rolling out. We're trying to sort it out with other helplines and crisis lines. Like, can you support us during these hours? Especially if someone's calling and it's 2 a.m. and they're in crisis, mm-hmm. we want to get you to the crisis line because they're probably more equipped. While our advocates can de-escalate and support crisis, it's not our primary role. Whereas like crisis lines have very specific training for that. Mm-hmm. And we might be great help. They might be even better help. So getting you to the right place as well. So that's still up in the air. We're still working on it, but trying to kind of weed out the needs and make sure that you're not just reaching someone that can help. You're reaching someone who is specialized and can really help you get what you need.
You work with immigration and safety planning, and then you also have just a general safety plan.
Yeah, general safety planning we use all the time. Anyone we talk to that said, I'm experiencing domestic violence, the first thing we're going to want to do is safety plan with you. Are you safe tonight? Here are things you can do. We can map out a route for you to get out of your house if we need to. You can work out a system with your neighbor that you can call your neighbor and they know, things like that. Safety planning and working in this time politically, especially with ICE, it looks a little different. Our hands can be tied, but it doesn't mean we're not going to do anything. And so what we're doing right now is working very closely with our advocates and making sure that we know the difference between search warrant and arrest warrant. So if it's an arrest warrant, we're not going to let you in. If you're asking for names, we don't have to give you those names. If someone, we've had someone, police officers show up at the shelter and say, we have an arrest warrant, and we know they're in there. We're like, we cannot disclose whether or not they're in here. And if you have an arrest warrant, that's for arrest only, so you're not coming in here. So making sure that we're covering and doing what we can to protect mm-hmm. at all times and knowing, like, they will push boundaries and say, no, this is the law. And we can easily say, no, it's not the law. And we're not gonna do that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Yeah.
Have y'all ever had yet to deal with anything involving ICE?
Winks. Yeah.
There we've seen occasions.
We've had, and this is, I hope it's not too much to disclose, but downtown Olympia, we've had our advocates stopped and questioned because of the color of their skin and questioned needing to provide their ID. So we know they're around. Down here, they're cruising around. And so I don't know that anyone's come in the building yet, but we've had funding orders that have said, yes, we're going to give you a lot more money if you send us a list. Absolutely not. We're not going to do that. So it's, they're sneaking in. They're trying to, but we're not playing.
Wow. So
it's sneaky, and that's why we're working.
We'll give you funding if you give us details on people that we think we should arrest as ICE.
It's deep.
Wow.
And so just know for Safe Place, and I'm sure every other nonprofit for that reason, we're not falling for it. We know. And we're taking the precautions and making sure that we're being really careful.
That's very reassuring.
It is. Because at the end of the day, we're helping anybody. Like I said, not just race or religion or ethnicity or anything like that. Any status. Like, we're going to help you. We're going to do the best that we can.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's very important.
Yeah.
Along the lines of that, you do provide services in Spanish.
Yep. Yep. If we don't have someone on site that speaks Spanish, we have interpreters that we can call over the phone. We can make long-term arrangements as well you're going to need a Spanish-speaking advocate for quite some time. Let's see if we can't even find an organization that is specific to your community. Everyone speaks Spanish there, and they might offer the same exact services. So that might be a really good fit for you. But we're always going to try to find a way to communicate. We're always going to help. We have tons of different languages that we can interpret via phone.
Talk about the client bill of rights that you have on your website.
Yes. So we read those to anyone that calls, anyone we talk to. They've said, well, we've already read our rights. Well, guess what? We're going to have you sign them again just so you know. And their rights to protect us. They're also rights to protect them. So we're letting them know you have the right to receive services. You have the right to decline services at any point. You can change your mind, say never mind. You have the right to have protected information. So we are not releasing your information to anybody unless you sign paperwork to do so. We are mandated reporters we put in there. You have the right to access your file here. You can see anything that we have here. It's your information. You can see it. All sorts of things that are there to protect survivors and let them know up front you have rights and we're telling you your rights, even if you need to engage in those rights with us, right? You know, maybe there was a miscommunication. You have a right to say, no, thank you, I'm not telling you that. And if it's an honest mistake, we're probably going to, you know, swallow our tongue and go, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize I did that. And so it also protects Safe Place. We are mandated reporters. We have to tell you that. And so if we do have to make that call, they are aware that we're mandated reporters. Things of that nature. They're on our website and we read them to everybody that calls. If they've called before, we'll say, hey, you know, have you called us before? Yes. Do you want me to redo your client rights again? They can say yes or no. Most of the time they say no, but we're gonna make sure that you know they're there and we can give them to you.
That's very supportive. Thank you. So I've noticed it shows up on every page of your website. What is that little escape button?
Yeah, that escape button is in place for safety reasons. We have a lot of survivors who are still living with their abuser. They're still in danger every day. And if they're actively trying to get out of that situation, they're going to need to pull up resources. And if phones are monitored or someone's looking over your shoulder, if you hit that escape button, it'll take you out of our website and into Google. And that type of software is rolling out very quickly right now because we're realizing there's a need. There are resources out there that have masks on them, skins on them. And so what you're needing to use is underneath, but you can quickly hit that button and it pulls up a skin that says, this is what you can see. It's not what I'm using, but this is what you can see.
Now, does that wipe the browser history?
Some apps, it does. This one, ours, I don't believe it does.
Okay.
Some apps are really sophisticated.
So this one, it's just the back button.
Yep.
Okay.
Because I go back.
And push that back button and you'll go back to the Safe Place website.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not all places are like, mostly apps have that really sophisticated software that will do that, ours, or they'll use incognito.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So what is the process for getting services?
We, like in the hospitals, we're there and we're telling you we're there and we have these services if you want them. Some people know word of mouth, like, oh, I'm going to go check this place out. You can walk in and receive services. That's something really great that we have available too. It's not a closed office.
Okay.
And then calling that helpline too, saying, I really need these things. Let's put in a referral. You can self-refer and we'll get you there, as well as other agencies that can tell you that we're here too.
So it's not like you've got to fill out this paperwork and intake form.
Nope.
And we'll get back to you and make an appointment, talk about what your needs are. It's straight out the door.
Yep.
Right off the cuff. We're going to talk about it. What are your needs right now? I don't need to tell you my entire backstory. I don't need to tell you, you know, here's my date of birth and my phone number and, you know, all the million things that you might have to provide other other organizations to receive services. It's just right now. Let's go.
And the only time we'll ask that identifying information if they're ready to share or want to share is if we're trying to relocate them right away, mm-hmm. or we're trying to screen them into shelter to see, do they qualify? This we'll need to call you back, right? And so those are really the only times. And unless you choose to divulge that information, you don't have to tell us anything. It's confidential. You know, we're not going to try to call you back, especially if we don't know that it's safe, things like that.
Okay. What kind of barriers have you experienced people having coming to you?
Yeah. One of the biggest barriers that we have outside of just experiencing domestic violence is a barrier to getting help is a lot of the population that we help struggle with addiction or they've been drug affected. One of the most vulnerable populations for receiving or being on the receiving end of domestic violence is people with disabilities as well. And so those are huge barriers. We can't really get consent if you're under the influence to protect you as well, because we want to make sure you're understanding what we're here for. And sometimes it's hard to help somebody who comes in under the influence because we just don't understand their needs. But that is one of our biggest barriers. We want to help. We're not here to judge if you use drugs or alcohol. That's
so a criteria to receive services is not being under the influence
in that moment.
Okay, yeah. So if someone is using mm-hmm. whatever substance mm-hmm. right, but in that time that they're coming to you,
yeah,
they need to be sober, not necessarily clean,
no,
but sober.
No, and we really understand that self-soothing and self-healing and struggling with trauma leads to addiction a lot of the time if you don't have resources. And we know that everybody copes, and everybody copes in their own way, and we're not here to judge you for that. That's not what it's about. But we do need to make sure that you're understanding, and we can get those signatures and we can use them. Because if somebody doesn't understand what they're signing, or they seem as though they can't make their own decisions, if we have a disability perhaps, then we have to make sure we can go about it. Maybe we'll try again tomorrow. Maybe we'll reach out and see, like, can we talk to someone in your family? Will you sign a paper that says, yes, I can talk to somebody? So try to do our best, but to engage in services, you have to be able to have moments where you're sober and really you have to be active and engaged in the process.
Now, this is more of a nuanced, more situational question, but yeah. Situations like this can come up.
Yeah.
Where you have, for an example, someone who has been a heavy meth user, for example, and that does, even if the person is not currently under the influence, that does create changes in brain structure,
yeah.
which can make communication and thought processes difficult to be coherent
yeah.
in their delivery of yep. that. And so how do you discern? How does Safe Place discern when someone of that, you know, disposition is wanting to communicate and say, I am not currently on math.
Yes. Yes.
But are still having a hard time articulating. And so a person who may not be as familiar might assume that they're lying.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate? How do you discern
yep.
those situations?
One of the biggest symptoms that we see of somebody who is permanently or chronically affected is paranoia, very heavy paranoia. And so,
and mind you, this isn't specifically a meth user as an example.
Anybody.
Like this yeah. can also happen with people who have been in alcoholism
yep.
for a long time,
yep.
for example.
Yep. It has physically clouded or changed their brain structure, like you were saying, and so they're programmed unintentionally and not even, it's implicitly experiencing these things, or it's blocked their cognitive functioning abilities permanently sometimes. And so we use our judgment, personal judgment. We also we'll pull other advocates or people in the office to come talk with us to get so we can corroborate and talk about it a little bit more. And there's sometimes,
like, this is what I think. What do you think? Everybody has different experiences and knowledge and understanding.
Yep. And a lot of times when someone's coming in that position, the first thing I'm going to do is, if they're incredibly drug affected and they're struggling to remain, like they just can't take care of themselves or they really need help, I really try to reach out to like behavioral health if they consent to that. Mm-hmm. There's sometimes that we've had somebody or multiple somebodies come in that are so heavily drug affected that we've had to call help. And it's a program called CRU. So they come in specifically their crisis response and they help.
What's it called?
CRU. So CRU, Crisis Response Unit. Olympia has their own.
Okay.
And so we'll call them and say, we really don't know that they're aware of where they are or that they're okay, or we can't really get through to them and they're acting erratically, things like this. The first thing that we're going to do is try to get them grounded. And sometimes that means getting other agencies involved.
It has through their own consent?
Yep. Sometimes CRU, it's like calling 911 in a sense. We can call and they can come and make a judgment call, kind of like 911 showing up, like, this person clearly has a wound and it needs to be treated. And so that might mean that if they're unconscious, we're still taking them, you know. But after that, like with CRU, sometimes they'll end up in behavioral health and they will put a hold just for their own safety at behavioral health or at a hospital. We're putting a hold to see if we can't help you get to where you need to be. And then we'll move in for services if we can get them where they need to be.
Okay, so that means putting a hold on accessing services with you while they're moving through this process of services with, for example, behavioral health.
Yep. And sometimes even being brought to the hospital, they will not release for 72 hours or longer. And they will not let people in to speak with them for 72 hours. It's almost like a detox period where they can truly assess where that person's at and make sure that they're safe from themselves. And judgment as, am I able to see that I'm safe from others too? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a space that says trainings on the website. You offer trainings. What is that?
Yeah. So sometimes we host trainings just as our building is hosting it, but we're not putting it on. So we'll post there if something's happening. We do offer a Right Now ACT training, which is required for any advocate in Washington State. ACT, A-C-T, Advocate Core Training. You're going to work as an advocate in Washington State. You need that training. Mm-hmm. And so we train our own advocates. We also open it up. So if you need to be ACT trained or you want to be, you can come do that here. And so we've done self-defense classes. We've offered those and people can come and pay discounted rate and do those trainings. I've developed trainings. Other staff members have specialized trainings that they can come and enjoy. So it's just where we keep it updated and posted.
Yeah. Actually, I interviewed Peer Olympia, and they also do trainings as well, advocacy trainings. What are the differences between yours and Peer Olympia's, if you know?
Yeah, so our program is not only domestic violence, but it's sexual assault. So that determines the requirements. Mm. And so if you're applying for a sexual assault position elsewhere, you have to have those sexual assault hours too. And so ours have merged to make sure we're meeting all the requirements for domestic violence and sexual assault.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a difference in specialty.
Yeah. Okay. Having both never hurts at all.
Yeah, for sure. Cover all bases.
Yes. But if you're working for an SA specific program, you need those hours.
Okay, okay. Renting the East Wing. It's a meeting space. Talk about the East Wing.
Yeah, we have this essentially small conference room. We do our big meetings in there, trainings. I did an artist walk back a couple months, and I hosted in there for community to come in and see art and do art. I've done movie screenings in there, and so it's just a space. If you have a large meeting that you need to hold, call us, and we'll see if we can book it for you. It's really just a simple phone call and saying, hey, like, we'd like to do this. Can we use your space?
You can go and look at the website.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have a contact form.
Yeah. I'd always, that's why I say, like, call and ask those questions, because we work with different organizations in different ways. And so you can fill it out on there, but also just call and see, like, I'm going to fill it out and I'd like to do this on this date. Do you even have availability on that date?
Right.
Your best bet for this, something like this, would be not to call the helpline, but to call our business office, which is also on our website.
Yeah. I noticed that you have in your news and events on your website, you have a soiree coming up in September 27th.
Yes, that is our gala. We do it every year. It's one of our biggest fundraising events. We invite people in the community, our partners. They can purchase tickets to come in, which all goes right back to Safe Place. It's really fundraising. And networking to try to gain other partnerships as well, because we are nonprofit and we don't have a lot of funds. So sometimes we have to do events or ways to raise money. And this is a really fun one to put on, and people get really excited about it and they just want to be there.
What's fun about it?
It's formal. So people can come up. There's dinner provided. There's good, like, conversations. And just, we do our best to make sure everyone's entertained. Sometimes they'll have different things happening at each gala. So this time, as it's planning, we're not sure what's exact. We don't have an exact itinerary right now. But we're really, like, reading our crowd and seeing, like, this person would really love to, or this person might really love to see this organization come and speak or come and engage with us. Let's reach out to them. And so it's just a really cool night to help your community, but also dress up and have a nice dinner and spend time with people who are also like-minded too.
Cool. How can people get involved? Volunteering? Are you hiring? Mm-hmm. How do people donate? Join the board?
Yeah, the first step is check out our website. There's always links to donate or lists of things that we'll need. Mm-hmm. You can also call the helpline and see, like, hey, do you guys need anything right now? How do I come in and actually volunteer? We do have spots for interns to come in. And then for hiring, our postings always go on Indeed and Glassdoor. And so if you're on there, if you just search Safe Place, search Advocate, we should pop up. And we'll also post there if we need volunteers or board members that are volunteers. And we'll post opportunities there for interns.
What are some things that a volunteering board member could do?
Yeah, so our board, they obviously oversee Safe Place, and they're making those really generalized decisions on behalf of Safe Place. And so they would be interviewed, and then they'd go through training to make sure that they have a good understanding of what we do and who we work with. And then their job is to just really engage in those big decisions and meeting very regularly to just discuss how things are going and make sure that if a shift needs to happen, then we're going to make that happen. And so we like board members who are strategic, but we also like board members who have a lot of experience in this field, that are creative thinkers, things like that, just collecting a really good hive mind to be able to support us.
Is there anything else you would like to share?
Yeah, I mean, Safe Place does a ton of really wonderful things, and they've been around for a long time. But one thing we really want to note right now is that these are really hard times politically, and so many things are changing and happening. And just knowing that we're standing strong in our mission and our values, and while sometimes things may have to shift because it's mandated, we're still going to do what we believe is right. And so we're here, we're for everybody, we're for anybody, and we just want to help in any way that we can, really. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kayla.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm so glad I got to sit down with Kayla to get all the nuanced details about all that Safe Place has to offer. Safe Place is located at 521 Legion Way Southeast in downtown Olympia, and their lobby is open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to noon, then from 1 to 5 p.m., and they are closed Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You can call the Safe Place business line at 360-786-8754 and their 24-hour hotline at 360-754-6300. And for TTY service, the number is 711. You can also shoot them an email through either safeplace at safeplaceolympia.org or confidential at safeplace.org. Drop-ins are on Mondays from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Sound Legal Aid is available typically the first and third Thursday of every month, but please make sure you check the website to confirm. Safe Place is also one of our Resource Report Zine Distro locations. That's it for today's Resource Report, produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org.
You can also find our shows archived indefinitely on rss.com/podcasts/resource-report.
Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.